We're with Rich Martini this hour as we talk about the afterlife, one of our favorite topics, and we'll take your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Rich Martini with us. Rich, when you deal with those who have passed on, do they come to you like Amelia, or do you go to them?
Well, that's a great question, because you asked me earlier about how do you contact the flip side, and I liken it to like being in a huge entertainment park, like where a Ferris wheel is and a roller coaster.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to somebody on the Ferris wheel, you have to shout at them as they go by. And, you know, so that's one way to do it, and that would be like through a medium or having somebody else do it for you. But if you want to do it yourself and you want to take the ride and get in the car and ride in the ride, I work with Scott DeTambel out here in Los Angeles. He's at lightbetweenlives.com. But also the Newton Institute, where they've trained people how to do this kind of hypnotherapy, where you have the experience of going into the between lives realm and meeting up with your loved ones who passed on, as I've done, as many people have done. If you go to the Newton Institute, they have a searchable database to find someone near you. But in terms of my own thing, you know, at first I started doing these sessions with Scott and other people, Paul Orend in New York City. And while I was doing the session, I would notice there were other people around a conversation, like my father was there and somebody, but there might be somebody else that I'm not familiar with. And so then I would ask them questions like, who are you? What are you doing here? In my mind's eye. And then I found that I could ask people while I was filming people under deep hypnosis, I could pass a question to the hypnotherapist. Ask if so-and-so's around. Can that person come forward? And often they did, and they answered my question. And so then at some point when I started running into mediums who were doing this kind of work, I thought, well, let me do the same thing. Let me see if I can access the same person that I was talking to before. So recently I was on a show, Kevin Moore's show. I didn't know that he was a guy who channels Edgar Cayce, but he invited me on a show in London. And while we were doing the show, I had said to him, you know, if you want to experiment with this idea of me asking you questions, you know, talking to somebody on the flip side, we can try it.
Yeah.
You know, on the show. So at some point I said to him, well, you know, let's just go to your point. When you're meditating, I usually ask people if they had a dream or something, but if you're meditating, just in your mind's eye, who do you see? Now, I didn't realize that normally thinks he's channeling Edgar Cayce, okay? So he starts talking about a guy who, you know, died in the 1940s and lived in Virginia Beach, and his first name was Edgar. And so I realized, oh, this guy, you know, says he's channeling Edgar Cayce. So instead of doing the thing of what most people do is like, so what do you think about the future? I said, so Edgar, why were you so wrong about all your predictions? You were flat out wrong. Pretty much you were fantastic when it came to talking about health issues, when he would go into a trance. All kinds of people, you know, Mark Twain.
Oh, he was huge accuracy.
Yeah, huge fame. Very successful at it. He was excellent at it. But when it came to predicting the future, California's going to fall in the ocean in 1999, all that stuff, he was all flat out wrong. And he said, well, it's because I was giving likely possibilities. And this is the thing that I talk to with people on the flip side. The future's not set. There are likely outcomes. And they may say, you know, this is going to happen next month, or so-and-so is going to win the election, or the Cubs are going to win the World Series, or whatever they're going to say. But because we have free will, everyone has free will, they can change their mind in the middle of whatever it is they're doing. And they often do. So things don't turn out the way people predict. It's just not set. But it was interesting because he answered the question instead of denying that he'd been so wrong. So then I asked him, I said, well, you were absolutely right with your medical prognoses. So how did that happen? Were you accessing somebody over there while you were in trance who had been a doctor, or were you a doctor in a previous lifetime? And he answered, no, I was accessing a counsel. Now, that's a term I'm familiar with, but
right.
Kevin Moore is not. I said, okay, can we talk to that counsel? He said, sure. And so he brought forth about seven or eight people that he said were all doctors. So this was his advisory board. So he'd go into a trance, and he'd bring a case to this advisory board on the flip side, just like I was saying, you know, talk to scientists. the advisory board would give him a prognosis. Here's what you do. Tell him to take this medicine, blah, blah, blah. And he'd come back and tell people to take that medicine. That would cure them. So I said, well, who are these guys? Are these doctors who have lived on the planet in the past? I mean, you know, like Aristotle or somebody back in... And he said, no. They're all people from different realms. Doctors who work in different realms. Okay. And part of my work is not to judge what people are saying, just to make a note of it. But this is consistent with other reports I've had, that this isn't the only realm that we're in, that people do have past life memories of being on other planets. People do have past life memories of being in other realms. So whether or not this was actually Edgar Cayce talking, all I can say is he gave me new information that I didn't know, that Kevin Moore didn't know. That idea that he was accessing a council of doctors as opposed to just one person. So that's what I've been focusing on. When I talk to someone on the other side, I already know how they died, let's say, you know, especially if I've met them or known them. I already know something about them. But I ask, give me some piece of information that I don't know.
That hardly anybody knows.
That nobody knows, exactly. That nobody, like Amelia's right arm. That was out there, but I didn't know it, and certainly Jennifer didn't. But I try to do that with anybody that comes through. Like when Jonathan Crane came through the other day, I said to him, is there a specific thing that I can tell your wife, Sally Kellerman, that she was doing that only you would know? And he said she took a painting off the wall that was too painful to look at.
Huh.
Now, I haven't been able to talk to Sally. She's been busy, and for a variety of reasons, I just haven't been able to get a hold of her. And, of course, not everybody wants to talk to your friend who's talking to the flip side when you're trying to grieve, you know. I understand that. But when I do talk to her, I will ask her and find out whether or not she took that painting off the wall. But that's kind of how you prove it to yourself. So you're talking to a medium, you know, to your lost loved one. Well, I'll give you a great example. When I was working on the movie Salt, this actress says to me, do you know John Edward? I said, yeah, I don't know him personally, but she said, he called me out of the blue and said, your father's coming through on all my sessions and I need you to come here and talk to him. She didn't know who he was. She didn't know who John Edward was. And she had not told anyone her father had committed suicide when she was a young girl. So she thought it was some guy trying to hit on her, but she took her boyfriend over to John Edward's offices. And John said, your father's coming through my sessions. He wants you to call your mother. So she called her mother in Michigan. And the mother was like, yeah, I know who John Edward is. Great. He's a medium. And the man came through, the husband, the father came through and said, I want you to find this red folder that's in the back room. And she went looking for it. And John Edwards directed her. No, in the, you know, back of the other shelf. They found this red folder, and inside were photographs of him, the husband, as a happy man, the happy family. And he said, I want you to look at those pictures because that's how I am now. That's how I want you to remember me. And he said, oh, and by the way, to my daughter, you're pregnant, and that boyfriend you brought with, you better marry him. She didn't know she was pregnant until that moment. And she did marry him and had the kid. She'd never told the story to anyone. She told it to me in the movie set of Salt. But we do get messages from people on the flip side. We just don't hear them. We're not listening. We kind of dismiss it. Oh, that reminds me of my uncle.
Or don't believe it.
We don't believe it, or... We kind of go, oh, that it can't be. But, you know, instead of doing that, just go, oh, it could be. That's all I'm asking. Just say, it could be. Isn't that funny? You know, that's the same cigar smoke that I used to smell every time I went by his house. I'm smelling it now. Why is that? People now have been talking to me about this quite a bit, as you can imagine. A friend of mine said the other day, I keep hearing this song in my head, and he sang it to me. I said, what is it? He says, I don't know. But it sounds like Prince's song, you know. Prince, the musician.
Right, the one who just passed.
And I said, oh, well, that's pretty funny because, you know, Prince showed up at my lunch the other day. So, and, you know, look, I don't know Prince. I reviewed him once when I was writing for Variety.
Never met him?
Never met him. And, you know, honestly, I was in this back VIP lounge with him, and all these girls were lined up to meet him, and I might have been a little jealous, but I was also thinking to myself,
you don't get jealous.
Yeah, well, look what he's doing. This is, like, tacky, you know. But, wow, what a musician. But when he passed, I really started listening to his stuff, and I, oh, my God, this guy was so amazing. So I saw an interview with Kim Babcock, who's a medium, and Eric Medhus on channelingeric.com, and I asked him if I could excerpt pieces of it. Because in the interview, he gives new information about his passing, about, and this is before the autopsy had come out and all that stuff. Ultimately, while I'm sitting with Jennifer one day, Jennifer Schaefer, she goes, "Prince is here." And I go, "What?" And she says, "He wants to talk to you about your book." You know, and of course I'm thinking, is this real? I don't know. But I started asking.
But you've had experience. So
I've had experience, yeah. And I don't judge. I said, "Dude, so what happened? Why did you die?" He said, "I died because I liked to dance too much." I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Because I was jumping off pianos in high heels, and it hurt my ankles, and I just couldn't stop doing it. I loved doing it." You know, he's an amazing
hence
dancer.
The pills.
And he said, "I started taking pills because I loved, I couldn't stop doing that move, jumping off the piano. You know, if I hadn't done that, you know, I'd still be here." And then I said, "Was this an exit?" Or no, I'm sorry, this was Kim Babcock asked, "Was this an exit point in your life?" And he said, "Yeah, you know, everybody has points in their lives where they might, you know, I think I'm going to check out. I've done what I came to do." And he also talked about epilepsy in the interview, that he had epilepsy as a little kid, and that an angel had come to him and had cured him of epilepsy. And he told his mom, you know, he had epilepsy, and he went to his mom. He said, "This angel came and told me I'm not going to have it anymore." But he talked about it with Eric Medhus during this session. And then I was able to find that, an interview with him, Tavis Smiley did, where he talked, for the only time in his life, he talked about the fact that he had epilepsy and an angel had come to him. So now what was interesting is just the other day, a second time he showed up, when I told you about Michael Newton, you know, being there at our lunch, at the very end of this thing, she goes, "Oh, that's funny, Prince just showed up." And I said, "Well, wait a second, we can't."
She seems very sensitive as a medium, huh?
She, very good, yeah. Brilliant. JenniferSchaefer.com, really sharp. But I said, "Prince, let me ask you a question. You came to, 2 months ago while we were here talking to explain something to me, and now here it is 2 months later. What does that feel like for you?" He said quickly, "Like a millisecond, like a continuous conversation, like a comma in a sentence." The idea being, over there, time is so different, relatively. And this is something I explore in the work, too.
Did he recall coming to you the first time?
Yeah. No, he was saying. In other words, he was continuing the conversation we had 2 months earlier.
So he knew you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he was adding to what he had said 2 months earlier, which was Michael Newton had just said, you know, think of your loved one as a translucent thing. And now Prince came forward and said, it's a vibrational issue. He said, it's a note issue, that the vibration of the note over there is a certain frequency, and over here we have to tune ourselves to the frequency in order to pick up what they're trying to tell us. So how do you do that? Well, turn off everything. Meditate. Close your eyes. Think of your loved one. Ask questions. That's how you tune your frequency to your loved one's frequency. Because, you know, who we are is an energetic atomic structure, energetic structure. Once we die, we know, you know, energy doesn't dissipate. It moves somewhere else. So if you've seen a person or taken a picture of them, that's a photograph of their energy. And if you can picture it in your head, you're accessing, like the way Google searches for things, you're accessing that energetic pattern. And that way you can communicate with them, either sending message or receiving messages. Of course, you can't tell anybody because they're going to take away your driver's license or whatever. But my point is, those messages that you want to connect with people are all about love. They're usually not about lottery numbers. You know, needless to say, I always ask Jennifer, "And what are the lottery numbers today?"
You never get them.
Well, I did. I was interviewing somebody. I said, "And what are the lottery?" And she started saying these numbers. And so I just wrote them down, and I went and I played, and I won. I won a dollar.
You won a dollar?
And when I won the dollar, right, the price of the ticket, I heard a voice in my head say, "You weren't very specific, were you?"
I guess not. Let's take some calls before the break, and then we'll take final calls with you, Rich, when we come back. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Thomas.
Tom. George, thank you for taking my call, and Rich Martini, I look forward to hacking the afterlife. My question is, what's exciting about your work is it seems that the average man, the average woman, can develop a commonplace, daily, reliable, effortless, and I want to underline the word effortless, communication, lines of communication with the flip side, as you call it, the other side, the other world, multiverse, whatever.
Yeah, well, Tom, that's exactly what they're saying. I try to be objective as best as I can. I've written for a number of, you know, newspapers and stuff. I try to be objective. And so I'm consistently hearing these terms of that everyone has this ability. Everyone can talk to the other side. Everyone can connect. That people just don't have a chance in their busy lives and the internet and everything else, the emotional ups and downs, of just being calm and connecting. And the truth is, if it's just from your subconscious, it doesn't matter. You're still going to have the same effect, which is feeling better about the fact that you're on the planet, enjoying the sunshine, enjoying the fact that you chose to come here and be part of this journey with your friend. How cool is that? I mean, you know, people tend to forget that.
Next up, we go to Nancy in Santa Barbara, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Nance, go ahead.
Hi, George, and hi, Rich. I'm wondering, are the deceased always available on the other side, even though they may have reincarnated? How does that work?
Well, here's what they say. Two-thirds of our energy is always back there. So think of it as a theater. Two-thirds of our higher energy, or what do you want to call it, our bigger energy, I say higher because we're aware of all of our previous lifetimes, that energy, that's sitting in the theater watching us on stage. On stage is roughly about a third of our energy. Michael Newton's work, anywhere from 20 to 40% is what people would say. So if you just think of it from the theatrical thing, out in the theater, we're aware of ourselves on stage, but on stage, because of, you know, the veil of forgetfulness, we aren't aware that there's an audience out there. So when people pass away, they may have adventures that they go on. They may want to do stuff that they never got a chance to do. They can always connect to you because, you remember, they're outside of time. So if you're calling, or if you're crying, or you want to, you know, you remember that time we did this thing together, they'll stop by. But, of course, they do have things to do. So, you know, it's funny how people are kind of like, are they there all the time? Are they watching me while I'm sleeping? You know, that's not generally what they say. But when you put them in your mind's eye, then they are accessible. And they may not respond to you because maybe that'll screw up your path because it might disturb whatever you're doing, you see? So not everybody gets a response, let's put it that way. And it might be difficult for them to communicate. Maybe your emotions are so, you know, altering the receiver so much that you can't make that communication. But if you focus on it and allow it to come and just send love, love is obviously the best tuning fork that you can use. If there's love there, you're going to definitely get love back.
Absolutely. Rich, stay with us. Coming back for our final segment of phone calls with you. I want to talk with you a little bit more about mediums when we come back, and we'll take final phone calls as well right here on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines next hour here on Coast to Coast, but when we come back, more with Rich Martini as we talk about hacking the afterlife and your phone calls as well. Okay, welcome back. Rich Martini with us. And, of course, we'll get to your phone calls. Let's go to Avril in Toronto, Canada, on the international line. Hi there.
Hi. Well, thank you, Mr. Norrie.
You're welcome.
Guest. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
It's the first time I've ever called.
Well, perfect.
I have a question for your guest. First of all, my father died probably about, 25 years ago. And obviously, I loved my father, but we weren't all that close. We lived on different sides of the ocean.
Uh-huh.
And very, very close to him becoming sick and dying, I had a sort of precognizant thing, I guess you would call it that. I had a dream that he was on top of a very tall wall, and he fell off, and I knew when he hit the ground that he was dead. So you know how you wake up crying sometimes from a dream?
Sure.
It hasn't happened to me often, but it did on that occasion. And I realized after my father had died, because he never told anybody he was sick, that's what that was.
Right.
I had an awareness ahead of time. But I guess my main question is, I do believe in reincarnation, but I wonder how long, if we're available on the other side to be able to communicate with our loved ones who are still on this in this world,
right?
How long do we hang about? I mean, how long does...
Good question. And I know when I first came to this research, that was a question I had. I know the Buddhists, you know, consider it's like 49 days or something, and then I've heard all these variations. Apparently...
And Rich, let me ask you this before you get into that. Can you reincarnate and stay on the other side at the same time?
Well, I was just going to say, that's exactly what people describe, which is when I said two-thirds of your energy is in the audience and one-third's on stage, that's what people describe, that about a third of our energy shows up here. Why? Why a third? They say it's because that if more energy came, it would blow the circuits. And then when I've run into people that were sort of avatars or famous holy people that were on the planet before, I ask, so why were you, you know, why did you have such an ability to move people? And the answer I got was that they came with more of the energy than most people do. So that's why when you're around them, you get a higher elevated sense of something, you know, a feeling of euphoria. Now, when she mentions this dream and you think about it, what is a dream, for example? Now, is that her experiencing something in the future, or is it her father's energy sending her a metaphor so that she can understand when it happens that it's okay, that things are okay? This is what happens. We climb up the hill and then we fall off the hill, but we're not gone. We're still accessible. And when you go back in 25 years, 2,500 years, whatever those years are, we see it from this realm. From that realm, I had one woman say that she experienced an entire lifetime here, and then when she got back to the flip side, she felt that she had only spent 10 minutes away from what she had been doing. So if 25 years here, it feels like 10 minutes over there, like Prince saying, you know, it's a millisecond. If 25 years feels like 10 minutes, then 250 years feels like 100 minutes, or which, you know, and 2,500 years is like 20 hours, let's just say. So over there, relatively, this thing of running into people that lived centuries ago, here, it's not that hard to imagine, because time over here is completely different. You'll hear a lot of people talk about that there's no time on the flip side, or time doesn't exist. Well, that's just an easy way of saying, well, it's relatively so different that it feels like it doesn't exist. But of course, souls progress from young to old. People go through experiences. I've talked to people who claim that they existed hundreds of thousands of years ago and experienced that. And if you just don't judge it for a minute, you realize, well, that's in terms of what they're talking about, that feels relatively different. So if two-thirds of your energy is back on the flip side, one-third of your energy is here. So that's why when people have a near-death experience and they run into someone who's still alive during their experience, it's disconcerting. Like, wait a second, are you dead? And they go, no, I'm not. David Bennett, who had a near-death experience, he saw someone on the flip side who was in his soul group. He said he was kind of like wispy, wasn't like a full figure. And then 25 years later, 30 years later, when he had a hypnosis session and this guy had passed away, he saw him in a soul group again, but he said, but now he was full figured. So it's like he saw the energetic portion of him, recognized it, and after the guy died, he was whole again over on the other side. I know if that sounds a little bit bizarre, but that's what the research shows. And like I say, I've been, you know, studying this for a while.
Let's go next to Oren in Waltport, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hey, good morning, Oren.
Oren in Oregon.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Yes, I'm a mystic. I've been a mystic all my life, and apparently the Creator gave this to me.
Cool.
And, well, I've seen many, many people who've died and passed away. They all come to me in a spirit body. I don't have any, you know, something through the mind or everything. I see them personally. And but beyond that, I've talked many times with the Creator, with God Himself. And I think that's the most important thing is the Creator. Now, when I was
now, how do you know He's the Creator? Is He wearing a name tag?
The Creator is the one who created the universe.
No, I know who that is. I'm just saying, how do you know that that's Him or her?
But as soon as He came to me, within 3 seconds, I realized I'd always known Him.
Okay, but how do you know that that's the Creator? Is He wearing a name tag?
No, He's not wearing a name tag, but He knows me, and I know Him.
Okay. I'm just trying
positive.
To point out that I find these reports quite a bit, and I interview people. I always ask the same question.
Right.
When people have that experience of seeing God, like Ibn Alexander did, but the point is that the relative term of what Creator means to you is different than to other people on the planet. You get a sense of being close to source.
Can I say a little bit about the Creator, about a little bit about what happened?
Okay, go ahead.
The Creator is a cloud being. It's entered into my room. It was a cloud.
Uh-huh.
Are you still there?
Yeah, we're listening to you.
Okay, the Creator is a cloud. It's thick as cheese. It looks actually more like water. The cloud covered me. And it covered my entire body, and I was immersed into this cloud of God. And then I asked God a question. I said, why is there suffering? You know, why suffering? Why make such a thing? And the Creator replied to me that it was a gift for us. But He said it was a terrible gift.
Okay.
But so then we talked, and then the Creator made love to me. I mean, it was almost like a man and a woman making love. He covered me in His cloud. He entered into my body until I didn't even know if I still existed because I was so filled with God. Then He wrapped Himself around me, lifted my soul from my body, and off we were into the cosmos, increasing our speed. Our speed just accelerated
uh-huh.
until finally I looked ahead. By the way, this was the second person of the Trinity who was with me. And there was a large cloud in space, and that was a God. That was a Creator. And as soon as I touched the cloud of God, the second person of the Trinity released me, and I went tumbling head over heels within the cloud of God.
Uh-huh.
And as I tumbled, I cried out, I remember this very well, I'm home, I'm home, I'm
very
home.
Good. Okay, that's precisely what everyone has said in the 35 sessions that I filmed in terms of being home.
Just like that?
Just like that. Well, not that part. Not the first part. But, you know, listen, when you start, what I try to do is you examine what he's saying, and which is, this is a consistent feeling of unconditional love when you connect with spirit. And now, this is why I recommend having a trained hypnotherapist with you, trained in the Michael Newton method, because they're familiar with these experiences. So when you run into somebody, let's just say they can help you identify who that is. Is this the God, or is this your spirit guide helping you experience this? Especially when you start to examine, you know, you're traveling somewhere, and then when you get there, God's there too, then, you know, you start to, you break down the nomenclature that we've lived with, the Trinity, for example. He mentioned that, you know, we know what the Trinity is, Son, you know, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Yeah, it's actually a mistranslation of the Aramaic, which is breath. It's literally supposed to be Father, Son, and breath, the breath of life. Pneuma was the word in Greek, and ultimately that became spirit, and people translated it into spiros, and then eventually became a dove. But what I think the metaphor was always about is that Creator or creators, whatever you want to call it, and humankind, the man-made flesh, supposedly, and what's the connection between those two? It's consciousness. So if you want to think of the spirit, or spiros, or the breath of life as consciousness, then you can see how that Trinity works in terms of the way the universe works. We have our consciousness out there, it still exists, and we have our bodies here where we inhabit that body with not all of our consciousness, but a lot, some of it, right? 20%, sometimes less, sometimes more. And when we end this life, when the body dies, we rejoin our other consciousness.
not everybody's consciousness, which some religions believe, but our own. And we're not omniscient when we get back there, because we only have the experience of other lifetimes that we've had. And that's why when you talk to somebody who channels somebody, don't assume that what they're saying is absolutely sacrosanct and correct. They may be, you know, misinterpreting it, as well as, you know, that's their experience. Anyway, I've found that when I grill these people on the flip side, like questions like, are you wearing a name tag? That allows them to have a little bit of a sense of humor about it, and allows us to sort of go, well, yeah, I've always felt like I've known this person who appears to be Buddha or Jesus or Muhammad or whoever it is that we see.
You know, we were talking earlier, Rich, about mediums, good ones, bad ones. What makes a good one?
Well, my friend the other day said, can I get a medium cool, or can I get a medium rare? I think what it is, it's just like, you know, you go into a stereo store. I used to sell stereo equipment, Systems Warehouse, San Francisco, back in the 70s. You go in there, and there's all these receivers. Some have, like, you know, bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And they have the dials and everything else. And some of them are really excellent, you know, and you just, and you feel the knob, and it kind of tunes a little bit. And then you connect. You hear it. Shortwave, if you ever played with one of those, you know, they have that major dial, and then they have the tiny dial that really fine-tunes
it. Fine-tunes it.
They now are interpreting what they're sensing or seeing or smelling or feeling or whatever their sensation is, and they're translating it to you. So that's outside of you. It's like watching the Ferris wheel go around and you're shouting at the person in the Ferris wheel. So because I've had the benefit of being in that Ferris wheel by doing these near, you know, these between life sessions and interviewing people with near-death experiences, I'm kind of familiar with what that Ferris wheel is. So now when I'm talking to a medium, I met Jamie Butler. Oh, you'll love this story. I get a call from a woman I've never met, but I've interviewed on Skype for Hacking the Afterlife. It's got a great chapter in there. She says, Rich, I was in my kitchen the other day, and somebody appeared and said, tell Rich he needs to go to this meeting in L.A. on Friday. Woman I don't know sent me this email. I go, what's the meeting? She goes, oh, it's Jamie Butler, the medium, is going to be in L.A. So I go to this meeting, you know, I buy a ticket, and I go, I introduce myself because I'd quoted some of her work in Flipside and also in It's a Wonderful Afterlife. She's, oh, that's great, that's fantastic. And then I said, and you know, it's kind of weird because somebody sent me here. And she said, well, let's see what happens. And then she goes into trance where she channels somebody, and that person shows up in the room and says, Rich, you know, how you doing? Like, what's going on with your book? You know, we're interested over here on the flip side. All I can tell you, it was, my mouth was on the floor. You know, somebody in South Carolina told me to go into this meeting where somebody had a message for me, and now Jamie Butler doesn't know the message, but now she's telling me the message. Anyway, so how can you tell somebody who's good? Ask around, watch their videos, see if they feel honest and real, you know, grill them. And when you get there, don't just sit passively and listen to them tell you, you know, about your life and how your loved one passed. You already know that. Ask them specific questions about their, what does my loved one want to tell me? You know, what are the lottery numbers? Whatever it is, you know, ask it. Don't be shy. Let go. Oh, one more really great one. I heard this the other day from somebody coming through, and he was telling me to tell a friend of mine to not let go. Don't hold back. And he said, no one ever comes over to this side wishing that they held back more while they were there on that side. I thought, oh, that's so clever. You see?
That is clever. It's cool, too.
Don't hold back. Just let it go. Go for it.
Richard in Indianapolis. Let's get you in here. Richard, go ahead.
Yes, first-time caller. Glad you took my call.
Thank you, Rich.
I'm going to make a comment, and I'm going to hang up and let you describe it.
All right.
I read a comic book years ago, and it was The Incredible Hulk versus Silver Surfer. I don't know if you're familiar with the characters.
Sure.
But anyway, the Incredible Hulk was always mad. Silver Surfer was trying to figure out why he was mad. So he finally figured it out. He said, he's just like anyone else. He doesn't want to die. And so what he said was, and I thought it was so profound, he said, what is a moment of agony in exchange for a lifetime of eternity to become all that there is? Meaning that the energy, the trees, you're part of everything.
Uh-huh.
And I think during time, from biblical days to now, with the technology, we have regressed instead of progress and tuning in to this energy. Because if you remember, when Moses went up to the mountains, when he looked directly at God, his face was aglow. That was energy.
He saw the face. Indeed. Rich, a minute to go.
Okay, well, of course, Moses didn't ask God if he was wearing a name tag. And, you know, this is, I don't mean to make light of it, but when you look at the books that have been written about the avatars that have been on the planet, you're going to find that once you start to look at what Jesus said or what Muhammad said, when they go into a cave with a man dressed in white or an angel and has them talk to God, and God gives them a direct message, that's very similar to what these accounts are. People under the near-death experience, someone, a spirit guide, comes and talks to them. During these between-life sessions, a spirit guide comes and talks to them. So I would disagree just to the point of it seems to be opening up more than closing. And in the case of a medium not too long ago, my wife was in a class, and somebody came through very clearly, and the teacher said, "Why are you coming through so clearly?" And he said, "Because the veil is lifting." The other day when Michael Newton was talking to Jennifer, she said, "He just showed me a picture of a veil falling down." So that kind of repeated comment, I don't even know what a veil is, but let's just allow that the veil is the veil between us and them. It's breaking up. It's dropping. It's not going to be there. And you're going to be able to communicate to people, I think, because that's what they keep saying. It's lifting. Maybe it's lifting because of the internet. I don't know.
That could be. Rich Martini has been our guest. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines.